Keys to the Capitol, usually heard at this time, will be brought to you next week. The following special program is transcribed.
The President's News Conference. Here in Washington, President Eisenhower held another news conference today. The questions were mostly about politics, and the President enjoyed himself, as you shall now hear. The first voice, President Eisenhower.
The only announcement I have this morning is that the Vice President is going to Brazil at the head of a 14-individual mission, leaving here Sunday afternoon to be present at the inauguration of the new Brazilian president. Aside from that, questions?
Mr. President, if you should decide to, Marvin Aerosmith, the AP, if you should decide to seek re-election, would you favor Vice President Nixon as your running mate again?
Well, my admiration, respect, and deep affection for Mr. Nixon, I think, are well known. Now, I have never talked to him under any circumstances as to what his future is to be or what he wants it to be. And until I'd confer with him, I wouldn't have anything to say.
Mr. President, Smith of the United Press. Secretary Dulles says he's trying to avoid having certain matters involving foreign affairs disputed in the coming national campaign. We've heard mention that among these matters is the Israeli-Arab situation. Do you think it's possible, sir, to exclude specific issues from a national campaign? And do you think it should be done?
Well, you ask a very large question and then put it in a very small frame. Now, this is what I believe. And I think that Secretary Dulles and I are in complete accord on this. I'm sure I know we are. That the great principles and policies that guide your foreign relationship should be absolutely a bipartisan affair, so that other countries do not have to fear too much a change in the political party occupying the executive branch of government. When it comes to many things as to method or personalities, for example, many people may not think that I have the personality or the proper approach to other individuals in handling very delicate problems. If they do think so, it is certainly their privilege to criticize and to try to make the change. But when we're coming and talking about the policies and the aims and the purposes and the aspirations of the United States and the methods, the broad methods, by which we're pursuing those are the things that I think should be above politics. Now, when you take a specific question, such as the one you mentioned, where does it belong, in policy or just in the personal ideas of an individual? So there, I wouldn't attempt to answer it in those terms, but I think my position is clear on it. I guess this is the name.
In terms of the Columbia State, I have two questions, sir. What do you think, Mr. President, of Congressman Richards' proposal that Congress approve of the general principle of long-term foreign aid but not bind itself to commitments? Would that be an acceptable substitute?
Well, you've asked one question. It takes a little time to answer. I don't know about your second. I think there's been a great deal of misunderstanding about the administration's viewpoint toward long-term aid. The great portion of our aid is put down in specific items for specific countries and is fixed and authorized by Congress. Now, there are certain projects in certain countries of the world that cannot be executed quickly. If you start them, you have to give some pledge of going on to the end, or some assurance that you will go on to the end. And it's only through such assurance that the International Bank, for example, will step in and do its part in those projects. Now, the whole purpose of the so-called long-term plan is to have Congress and the executive together in their agreement and in their statement that these certain types of projects could be extended, that agreements could be made extending over a given period. Of course, there can be no appropriations made now, The appropriations are made year by year. But if Congress and the executive together say something to the people of the world, we feel it ought to have more authority, give more confidence than if the executive alone states it.
I just have one very short one. Do you intend to follow the rotation custom this time? There's another vacancy in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and by rotation, by custom, that nomination would go to a South Carolinian. Do you intend to follow that?
I'll have to. Normally, I'll say this. In the circuit courts, we try to keep a proper representation from the broad areas, and with particular reference to the areas in which cases are normally originated. However, this one, you're asking me a question, is purely hypothetical. I haven't studied it at all.
Mr. President, I think this is known as the Crown Journal. This is at least a lively possibility, I believe, sir, that your income estimates in the budget may be fairly substantially exceeded. If you should come up with another billion or two, would you give priority to debt reduction or to tax cuts, or do you think that perhaps you might find purposes which you would have to spend more money?
Well, of course, any one of these three could happen within a modest amount. I suppose you're talking about this fiscal year 56. I think that we believe our estimates are pretty accurate, but I notice that they always seem to be off in the long, at the final accounting. But I do feel this, that until we start to accomplish some reduction on our great tax burden, that we really haven't got a financial house in order. So I have never tried to state what the amount would be, but I would like to see the intent on the part of the American people to, after their attention is drawn to this thing, to cut it down somewhat each year, a little bit, whenever it's possible.
I think, sir, you said reduction on tax burden. Were you speaking of debt reduction?
About cutting the debt.
Debt.
Now, after you've cut the debt, everybody wants to cut taxes. Goodness knows I want to cut them.
Mr. President, Earl Mazel of the New York Herald Tribune. On the basis of your 3 years' contact with politics and politicians, could you tell us, sir, some of your present impressions about the business of politics? Specifically, do you like it any better? Do you feel more proficient? And do you have any advice for professional politicians?
Would you mind asking me that question sometime at the beginning of a conference where everybody will agree we can talk that the whole half hour? After all, it's very long. I think, Mr. Drummond.
Mr. President, may I return to an aspect of the foreign aid program and say that it's evident that there's been some highly voiced opposition to the long-term concept from Senator Noland and Senator George, and I wonder whether you felt that you had a chance of winning for your program and whether you expect to make a maximum stand and pressure on Congress to try to bring it off.
Well, I've never really understood thoroughly this expression, pressure on Congress, Roscoe. But I do say this. I believe this is in the best interest of the United States. I have proposed it after thorough study. I believe in it, and I recommend it, and I'm going to stand for it on my part just as long as there's a chance to get it.
Mr. President, I'll come back this way. Last year, if I remember correctly, you opposed an anti-segregation amendment to a military reserve bill. How would you feel about an anti-segregation amendment to the school construction bill?
Some of you seem to have a genius this morning for asking questions that take a great deal of explanation, rather than merely to say yes or no. These things aren't that simple. Now, when it comes to my devotion to the Constitution, or what it provides, my devotion to the decisions of the Supreme Court, particularly when they're unanimous, I hope is complete. I believe in the equality of opportunity for every citizen of the United States. Now, it isn't, though, quite as simple as that. If we go to the other end and begin to talk about laws, I believe that every law, every important bill, and every important purpose from Congress should be on a bill of its own, so that we don't get a confusion of issues and therefore don't know for what we are voting or what we are not voting for. The Supreme Court, in reaching its decision as to what the law was, provided, and specifically provided, there be a gradual implementation and referred it back to the district court so that there should be gradual. But in the meantime, the need of the American children for schools is right now, immediate, today. So I think there should be nothing that's put on this thing that delays the construction of the bill. Now, when you come down, though, to ask a man to vote against something that he believes to be in furtherance of the constitutional provisions, then you've got a tough one. But I just think they ought to be, that's the way I would handle it, to put it very clearly. Because we want the schools now, and as much as the decision of the Supreme Court must be implemented, they said themselves, implemented gradually, because they recognize the deep ruts of prejudice and attitudes that have been built up and emotionalism been built up over the years in this problem.
Yes, Mr. President, I gather that if you think the school construction bill should be free of any amendment that might block it.
This is what I believe. The school construction bill should be passed. Now, if Congress wants to put the other on and does it, I will understand why they're doing it. But I just simply say, let's get the school bill. That's what I
mean. I think, Mr. Reston of the New York Times, this one won't take more than 10 minutes, I don't think, sir. In your press conference in Florida, I believe you said that you had all the factors about your political future marshaled in order in your mind. I wondered if you could indicate to us what those factors were and in what order.
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Reston, I won't take the time except to say this. We are not talking now about a man who has been ill and who's had, let's say, a full year to decide what he can do in the next 4 years. I have been, I think it was yesterday, it's 4 months since I had this illness that started all this type of questioning. Now I have to guess as to the next 5 years. And the problem is, what will be the effect on the presidency, not on me? And that is the problem. And you can yourself, without any long dissertation here, just lay out all of the factors of the energy, the intensity with which you can attack your problems, the zip and the zest that you can take into conferences when you have to get something done for the good of the United States. Now, this morning, maybe I may feel very zestful, but I do know that I have had an attack. It's my problem, and I hope I'm not going to dilly-dally too long.
Mr. President,
I think the gentleman would be glad.
Morgan of American Broadcasting. This is a fragment of Mr. Reston's question. Mr. President, have you now set a date for your February medical examination, and is it safe to assume that you will not announce your intentions regarding 56 until after that examination takes place?
I don't think there's anything safe to assume about any of my impulses. But I will say this. I asked the doctors myself when they wanted to hold this examination because I'm hopefully looking forward to a little southern trip. And they told me they thought it would be possibly before the middle of February, or they thought it was most likely to be before the middle of February.
Mr. President, Sarah McClendon of the El Paso Times. Mr. Edmund Mansour, who administers, I believe, about $9 billion in the General Services Administration, has been under attack by the Brooks Subcommittee of the House for the manner in which he allowed subcontracting and fee splitting to take place at the nickel plant down in Cuba. I wonder if you've made any study of this with relative to firing him.
Well, you add a postscript to your question that's completely, I assure you, I'll just ignore it. But the fact is that as quickly as I saw evidence of this, I have asked for a complete investigation of what has happened. I will get it in due course, and that's as far as I've gone.
Mr. President Hagen of the Detroit News, I'm sure you'll recall, sir, that these questions as to your political future were going on before you went to Denver and became ill. I wonder now, sir, if you could take the lid off and tell us what your intentions were then, if you had any.
You'd really have me in a jackpot if my answer then was no, wouldn't it?
President, the German foreign minister suggested yesterday, urged the West to seek a new Big Four meeting. He said that the last meeting at Geneva failed for lack of sufficient preparation. He said the last meeting at Geneva failed because of lack of sufficient preparation. I was wondering whether you could give us your opinion on a new form.
The last Big Four, Mr.
Yeah.
Well, I should say that it didn't fail for any lack of preparation, but I have no, I haven't even heard suggested any new. Now, it's always easy to say these things fail for lack of preparation, but remember, that meeting had been advocated by many for at least 2 years, and there was plenty of time to prepare, so if it wasn't sufficient preparation, it was merely because of lack of ability somewhere.
Mark, by now, you sort of left us hanging on the date of this next physical examination. Can you
just
tell
before,
us?
They told me they didn't know the exact dates because they didn't want to get all the doctors together they want, but before the middle of the month. I would say maybe between the 10th and the 15th, somewhere.
Tell us when you hope to go south.
Well, I don't know exactly. Don't know exactly.
That's right.
Down that a little. All right.
Child of the Gannett newspaper. Senator Johnson of Texas says that your farm program has been a failure. Do you have any comments?
Well, I'm not going to comment on what he says. I didn't read his comments, but I'll say this. It would appear that all farm programs, starting way back right at the close of World War II, have not succeeded in reaching their stated objective, which is to bring the farmer up to his fair share participation in the productivity of this country. And the only time since the close of World War II, where that was relatively true, was right in the middle of the Korean War. Now, the program that we worked so hard on just went into effect in 55. Its first effect on the farmer was with a wheat crop of 55, not before. So, recognizing that this thing is a problem, not one to be solved merely by one thing we could call a panacea, we have gone right across the board with the farm bureaus, Grange, every farm leader we can get a hold of, and devised what we believe to be a farm program that offers a real future to the family size farm throughout the country. And if it does that, it's certain the commercial size farms will prosper. And at the same time, recognizing that they are now, at this moment, behind rest of the economy, it provides features that begin to bring in money instantly, such as the refunding of the gasoline taxes, the increased money for the purchase of pork, the increased prices on flaxseed and a few other soybeans, and the extension and provision of credit for the farmer to carry him when he's in a bad hole. All of those things, and then on top of that, the acreage reserves. If they will go into that as quickly as the Congress can pass the law and the certificates can be issued, arrangements made, they can start getting money on it even late this spring, in the early summer. So I think that there's a broad program here that if Congress will act on it promptly, the farmers will begin to experience real relief.
Does that mean, sir, that if the Congress this year votes to reinstate the 90% support, you would reject it as part of an overall bill?
I don't believe I'll speculate. I'm just telling you I put in the program that I want to see passed.
Mr. President, Tully at Scripps Tower. I hope I can get away with this question. I wanted to ask you.
Just want to say
hello.
I have
to say yes or no to this. Do any members of your family object to your running again, sir?
No. I think it's late to go.
The President, in light of Khrushchev's disparagement of your aerial inspection plan before the Supreme Soviet, do you still have hopes for disarmament and a disarmament agreement with the Russians anytime soon?
Do I still have hopes for what?
A disarmament agreement with the Russians anytime soon.
Well, as everybody's always known, any move toward disarmament is going to be slow, tortuous, and certainly gradual, even at the best. Now, as a preliminary to disarmament, the great thing I was trying to promote was some confidence in each other that there would be an elimination of opportunity for surprise attack, which would set the stage for definite steps and proposals in disarmament. I would say, as of now, we have only one recourse: to remain strong, to remain true to our own moral concepts of right and justice in the world, to make no compromise on those, but to do the best we can in negotiations, whether they are big or little, to reduce these tensions and pave the way for a future disarmament. As of now, I'd say you couldn't go any further than that statement. I think this gentleman back.
Charles Shutt of Telenews. You have told us, sir, in this room before, that your home in Gettysburg is the first one you and Mrs. Eisenhower have enjoyed in something over 40 years. During your recent illness, sir, you had to spend some time at your farm and your now permanent home. If it isn't too personal, sir, did you miss the bustle of the presidency while you were there?
Well, it seems to me to be a fair question, although I don't know if it's terrifically important. Anybody who's been busy when he doesn't have immediately something at hand has a little bit of a strange feeling. Now, but to say that I was bored to death at Gettysburg, so many things that I have to do. I've piled up stacks of books I've never had a chance to read, and I'm trying to get through. I, as you know, daub with paints. I like the actual roaming around of a farm. I love animals. I like to go out and see them. I've got 1,000 things to do in this world, so I don't think I'd be bored no matter what I was doing.
President, Robert Washington, on the foreign aid matter, some of the resistance to the long-term part of the proposal at the Capitol among members of both parties appears to stem from the implication that the administration looks to foreign aid, economic foreign aid, as more or less a permanent thing. Do you consider that in this present so-called competitive coexistence phase that economic aid must be more or less a permanent part of our foreign policy?
Well, of course, some words are difficult to use. It's like never in bridge, or how long is a piece of spring? And when you say permanently, I don't know. Now, this is what I say. Honest people who studied problems ought to sit back and say, in what way can we spend our money to achieve the maximum of national security, to give to our people the confidence that will enable them to go about their ways in their day-to-day life, raising their families, making good citizens, and so on. Now, I think that is at this time, and certainly for the near future, the near term, part of that money has got to go in helping friends. For example, friends in certain instances, take Korea. Korea, I suppose, gets the largest single bite out of all this money. But they are keeping up an army of some 20 divisions. All right, their economy has to be supported or they can't do it. In other words, it's just that simple. Now, we want them to keep those divisions there for the moment. So it is a question of where do we get the most for our dollar? And I believe that that means we not only go out and show these people our common purposes to achieve freedom and maintain independence, but that when necessary, we help them to make a living and to carry out their part of the program.
Mr. President,
it's
Slevin of the Herald Tribune. To return to the tax question, sir, will you make a fresh appraisal of the prospects for tax reduction after you have seen how large the spring tax collections are?
Well, I think this is fair to say this. This is a matter that's appraised certainly every week and sometimes every day. I meet constantly with my financial advisors, with the economic advisors. Where are we going? Now, I really believe that you stimulate a greater productivity when you can lower taxes as far as possible. But we've got our bills to meet, and so I would go very, very slow in this fiscal year in which we now are until I see what's going to happen. And I certainly would not, on the basis of the slim surpluses we can show in prospect, I would certainly not be advocating any tax reduction this time.
President, Park Malinoff of the Des Moines Register. Within the last week, some Middle Western congressmen have been at the White House discussing the low pork prices and beef prices and stating something about the drastic political situation that exists. I wonder if you could tell us what you think about the political situation surrounding this farm problem and if you think it's a real problem for the public party or just imaginary.
Oh, of course, anytime any group believes, and particularly with reason, that they're falling behind the average of the nation in their returns they're getting for their products, there's trouble. You have to do something about it. The depressed areas are just another example of the same thing we're talking about. So, since in all these latter years, a governmental action has had so much to do with some of these things, of course, there is a problem presented to every political leader. The problem is to solve it for the good of the United States, and just that one factor, and that's the problem that's always there.
Mr. President, Frederick Kuhn, Chicago Sun-Times. Would you say what you consider a correct definition of the desirable bases for a common American-British policy regarding the Middle East?
Well, no, I don't think I would want to undertake here this morning a discussion along that line and arrive at a conclusion that could be stated as such. I do believe this. From the beginning, I pursued one policy. I told friends from both sides of that quarrel before I was elected, indeed before I was nominated, meeting them in Europe. I believe there's only one solution. America must be friends with both sides, and by doing so, use all of its good offices every day of the year to promote some kind of friendship, at least cooperation, between the two sides of the quarrel. There's just no other answer.
President Roberts of Newsweek. Sir, if you don't seek re-election, would you attempt to pick your successor, or would you favor a wide-open convention?
Well, I think that until we answer the first question, let's still go beyond it.
Clark, yes. Chief Justice Warren is one of those mentioned as a possible Republican candidate if you decide not to run. There is a school of thought, however, that it is bad policy under our form of government for the Chief Justice to return to active politics. Can you tell us how you feel about this view with particular application to Mr. Warren?
Well, I can only say I'll answer that in, if you will pardon, a personal allusion. The second I was nominated by the Republican Party, I resigned from the Army. But the day I left Europe, I retired from the Army and went without pay till nominated, and then I resigned. Now, I just don't believe we ought to cross over. We oughtn't to get the military and the civil power tangled up. We shouldn't get too great a confusion between politics and the Supreme Court. We want to be, I'll put it this way, on every official there lies a responsibility to do his part in keeping these separations and keeping each part of the organization, each part of the government respected in the eyes of the people.
Mr. President, could you tell us how you might plan to make your announcement on your political plans? Would it be at a press conference?
Well, I suppose it'll be just as dramatic as I can make it, though. I must tell you, though, that's one thing I haven't given any thought to.
Most of the farm legislation deals with helping the farmer. I'd like to put in a plea for the consumer.
You have been listening to a tape recording made today of the President's Weekly News Conference. This has been a presentation of NBC News. And this is Ray Scherer, NBC White House correspondent in Washington.
Be first to know through radio. This is the NBC Radio Network.